is it makes things much clearer to use this game plan. But, tell that there's no,
right here.
Oh, yeah, there's an eraser. Almost. Okay. What we saw last time, it was a while ago, we saw that the Rambam in Hilchot Chanukah says that what we celebrate on Chanukah, obviously in addition to the victory of the war and the Nespach HaShemin, is why the Maccabim went to war. And he says that the idea is Shechazra Malchut LiYisrael Yetra Umatayim Shana, that Chanukah is Yom HaTzma'ut. We also saw that the Rambam stresses that we don't just celebrate the first 40 years where the Maccabean dynasty was religious, but we celebrate all 200 years, even though for most of the time they were Tzedukim or Baitusim or Mityavnim, Hellenists, or even worse. The Rambam also stresses that he knows very well that they were Kohanim, and in his opinion, that's an Isser Doraita. Nevertheless, it's very clear that the Rambam is saying that it's better to have a Jewish state, even if not the ideal Jewish state, rather than not to have a Jewish state at all. And then we ask why, and what we saw the first point of why it's so important that we celebrate this Chazra Malchut LiYisrael, having a Jewish state. And we saw the first point that the Rambam brings down is also in Source 1 and also in Source 2. The Rambam talks about two opposite problems which are found in every Galut. Either in Galut you have a problem of a lack of freedom of religion, or like in the Galuyot today where there's too much freedom of religion and we have the problem of assimilation. The bottom line is, let's write assimilation because that's really what applies today. The Rambam says it's important to have a Jewish state to prevent assimilation, to have a good, a proper, positive environment. Okay. Let's go on. Let's go back to the Rambam in Hilchot Chanukah, in Source 1, where the Rambam mentions another problem that we had when we didn't have a Jewish state. Again, בבית שני, כשמלכי יוון גזרו גזרות על ישראל, וביטלו דתם, ולא הניחו אותם לעסוק בתורה ובמצוות, ופשטו ידם בממונם ובבנותיהם. They took away our money and our daughters. And this is a second problem that we had when we didn't have a Jewish state. Why Yehuda and his brothers went to war. And that's the problem of anti-Semitism. Right? Most of you probably know that Theodor Herzl, although he had a very long beard, longer than anybody's here, was not religious. What turned him? He was from a totally assimilated home. By the way, a lot of people don't know that he was from the family of Rav Yehuda Alkalai. That not a direct descendant, but from the family, he was like a cousin. Rav Yehuda Alkalai was one of the first Mevasrei Tzion. Have you heard of Rav Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer? Rav Elio Gutmacher? Are you familiar with their Perush al Mishnayot or their activities in Chovavei Tzion?
I just know it's great. There's one of his great-grandchildren is in this issue.
Yeah? What's his name?
Shmuel Gutmacher.
Really? A direct descendant.
Yeah, it's like his great
Manyan. Both of them were Rav Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer and Rav Elio Gutmacher were Talmidim Muvhakim of Rabbi Akiva Eger. And both of them were very strong Zionists. We're talking about 50 years before Herzl. And there was both of them wrote about the importance of starting a Jewish state, a modern Jewish state, with all that entails, before Herzl was born. It didn't get off the ground for a lot of different reasons. But another one who was in the Sephardic countries, who also spoke about a modern Zionist type of movement, was Rav Yehuda Alkalai. Herzl's family had Sephardic blood. And anyway, so Herzl was not religious. Anybody remember what turned him on to the need for a Jewish state? Historically, what did Herzl do? Herzl was a world-famous journalist. He was a journalist for the largest newspaper in Austria. And at the time, the Dreyfus Affair, right? He was covering the Dreyfus Affair. You have to remember that in those days, you didn't have too many foreign journalists, you know, going to other countries to cover things. And we're talking at the end of the 19th century. And his paper was the largest paper in the Austria-Hungary empire. And he was one of the top reporters, so he was sent to cover. And what was the Dreyfus Affair? You remember in a nutshell?
He was a Jewish something in the French Colonel. Army.
Yeah, a high-ranking officer in the French army, and he was framed. There was a French officer who sold secrets to the German army, and to get himself off the hook, he framed Dreyfus, and it was very easy to frame because he was Jewish. But what got Herzl was that everyone was yelling at the court case. They weren't yelling death to the traitor, or death to the Jew. They were yelling, death to the Jews. And what the Chidush, why was this so disturbing for Herzl? Because Herzl was a very strong democratic liberal. And he always thought that after the French Revolution, in the land of égalité, fraternité, and liberté, is that it, right? Right, equality, liberty, and freedom, egalite, fraternite, brotherhood, and freedom, there would not be anti-Semitism, eh? And he was wrong. So he thought there has to be another possibility. So he had this idea of setting up a Jewish state. That's exactly what the Maccabees were fighting for. Now, interesting enough, today, I don't know if you people, for sure you don't remember the Gulf War. 91? Were you born that? But you heard of the Gulf War. Yitzhak Shamir was the prime minister during the Gulf War. And I remember the exact date. It was January 14th, 1991. It's easy to remember because the deadline was January 15th. President Bush, George Bush Sr., who had heavy stakes in Texaco, Texas Oil Company, told Saddam Hussein, a lot of people forget that the reason why Bush was so adamant against Saddam Hussein invading Kuwait and taking more oil fields, because it hurt his own pocket. But he gave him a deadline, if by January 15th you don't pull out of Kuwait, America will attack you. To which Saddam Hussein countered, well, if you attack Iraq, then we, Iraq, will attack Israel. What do we have to do with it? Nothing. But the chosen people always has to be in the middle of everything. We didn't even have a Jewish state. Look, World War II, we were in the middle of everything. On January 14th, 1992, the Pentagon caught pictures, satellite pictures. You know, there is a satellite, I don't know what it is today. In those days, it was every 90 minutes. It would go around and take pictures of what was going on in the most delicate, strategic military point in Israel. Where is that? Nobody knows where the nuclear bombs are held. Dimona. In Dimona, there is a textile factory, which doesn't make textiles. It's called the Dimona Textile Factory. And you can see from far away, you know, these big domes, Krembos they're called. If you get closer, you see barbed wire and German shepherd dogs and these big signs, no photography allowed.
Desert?
Dimona is relatively, it's in the Negev, it's in the desert. You can't get too close, but everybody in the world, for sure in Israel, knows that that's where Israel's nuclear bombs are. I could tell you for a fact that they're not only there. And the truth is that I don't know what's there. No, most people don't know what's there. We know for a fact that it used to be there, because there was a guy named Mordechai Vanunu who sold for £1 million to the Sunday Times in England, secrets of the Dimona nuclear reactor. So either he made them up and was very creative, but he sat in jail in Israel in solitary confinement for 17 years. So I imagine that it was true. I know for a fact that they at least moved to another place, which that I really won't say because most people don't know it. I lecture in the Army, and one time I was giving a lecture at an Army base, and they told me to come 45 minutes early. I said, listen, I'm busy. And I said, the security in this base is more than anything you've ever seen before. You got to come 45 minutes early. So I came 45 minutes early, and they're checking me and asking me what did I do in the Army and this, that, and the other thing. And I see the security is mamash in another world. So I turned to the commander, the guy who invited me, the high-ranking officer, and I said, is this where, I won't say the code name, the other nuclear base is? So he sort of nodded. And anyway, you don't have to worry. Even if chas v'shalom, something happens in Dimona, we're covered. You know, Israel has nuclear submarines also, which are already, that I know for a fact, from somebody in Modi'in, in the intelligence, they're already stationed outside of Iran. So, you know, they're there, and Iran knows that. Israel told them, and the chidush of nuclear submarines is that you can't detect them. Radar can't pick up where they are. But we told Iran they're there and they're ready. So that, anyway, getting back to the story, and it's connected with the submarines outside of Iran today, on January 14th, 91, the Pentagon saw satellite pictures of what they called, the New York Times reported this about a half year later, what was called suspicious movement in Dimona. And President Bush got on the hotline to Yitzhak Shamir, the Prime Minister, and asked him what's going on in Dimona. To which Yitzhak Shamir answered, our intelligence reports that Saddam Hussein is serious when he's threatening tomorrow to send missiles on Israel. And he has capability of putting poisonous gas, chemical warheads, on the missiles. You know what chemical warheads are? So George Bush said to Yitzhak, but what's going on in Dimona? What, you're going to turn this into World War III? To which Yitzhak Shamir answered him, 50 years ago, the Germans used gas against Jews because we didn't have a Jewish state. Today that we have a Jewish state and a Jewish army, no goy will ever again dare to use gas on Jews. And if he does, he won't have Baghdad. And with that, he hung up the phone. And the day before the Gulf War broke out, President George Bush Sr. told Saddam Hussein through his political channels that even if you are thinking of attacking Israel, it's not worth it for you to use chemical gas. And that threat or deterrent is the only way that we can make sure that there's not going to be another Holocaust. And this is something that Yehuda Maccabi already understood 2,200 years ago. That for reasons of anti-Semitism, you need a Jewish state with a Jewish army where we protect ourselves. Anybody ever read the book or see the movie about Entebbe?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Yoni Netanyahu, who was the commander, as you all know, when he woke the guys up, but right before they were to land in Entebbe and to storm the building in the airport where the hostages, 103 Jewish hostages, were held, he gave them a very brief pep talk, if anybody remembers it. It was mamash two or three sentences, and it basically went along the lines of what the Rambam is saying. He said, we're going on a long and dangerous mission. I saw the movie many times. We're going on a long and dangerous mission to save Jews because they are Jews. And if we don't save them, nobody will. And that's what we saw in Europe. And that's not going to happen anymore. And L'chora, somebody could ask, you know, today in the modern world, davka, a person has a higher odds of being killed as a Jew in Israel, probably more than any other place in the world, because of terrorism, right? So if so, you could ask, you know, having a Jewish state doesn't exactly solve the problem of anti-Semitism. What would you answer to that point? It's a good question, right?
En masse, we're protected.
Sorry?
En masse, we're protected.
And, I'm sorry?
Like, as individuals, people might be at risk.
Oh, right. In other words, historically, if you're caring about your own individual hide, that may be the case, that it might be safer for a Jew in Australia or in Los Angeles. But as a mass, like Adi is saying, you know, I'll just share a simple statistic with you. You guys went to what, you told me you were going to Har Herzl, and was it Karon?
Yeah.
So you probably heard at the Tekes that they mentioned that to date, there are something like 25,000 casualties, people who were killed in 130 years of Zionism. They start counting from 1882, the first Aliyah. In other words, all the thousands of terrorist attacks and battles and wars and everything put together, 25,000 casualties, which is 25,000 tragedies, right? Kol hamikayim nefesh achat Yisrael kilu kiyem olam malei. On the other hand, if you put it in a historical context, like Adi is saying, 130 years of the Jewish, of Zionism, it's even more than the Jewish state, 130 years is less casualties than 1 week in Auschwitz. Right? It's all the wars put together, all the terrorism put together, is less than 1 week in one death camp. So, historically, yeah, having a Jewish state, even if it's a non-religious state, that's our point, right? Our issue is, even if it's not religious, pikuach nefesh docha kol haTorah kula, that is a halachic factor. Let's go on. In source 5, the Ramban takes a totally different twist to the issue. In his list of the Sefer Mitzvot, Mitzvah Dalid, שנצטבנו לרשת הארץ אשר נתן האל יתעלה לאבותינו, לאברהם ליצחק וליעקב, ולא נעזבה ביד זולתנו מן האומות או לשממה. The Ramban says that we were commanded to inherit and live in the land that God promised our forefathers, and not, לא נעזבה ביד זולתנו מן האומות, not to leave her in the hands of Gentile nations, Olishmama, or barren. Vehu amru lahem, this is what we're commanded. If you want to write down the source, it's Bamidbar, Lag Nag, Lamed Gimel, Nun Gimel. Vorashtem et ha'aretz v'yishavtem ba. You shall inherit the land and settle it. Ki lachem natati et ha'aretz l'reshet ota. Because I've given it to you to inherit. Etc. I imagine at this stage of the year you probably all heard of this mitzvah. What is this mitzvah generally called? Mitzvah? Yeshuv Eretz Yisrael. Okay? And that's true. If our topic is not Eretz Yisrael, but Medinat Yisrael, remember in the last year we pointed out that the Neturei Karta, they live in Eretz Yisrael, but their problem is with Medinat Yisrael. Okay, if our topic is Medinat Yisrael, why do I bring this Ramban on a sheet dealing with Medinat Yisrael? Anybody catch, what is it the Ramban is saying here that is very connected with the idea of having a Jewish state? Let's look at the Pasuk again. Bamidbar, Lag, Nag. How many po'alim, how many verbs, actions are there in this pasuk? Vorashtem et haaretz vishavtem ba.
Two.
Okay, what are the two verbs?
Vorashtem and
vishavtem. Yeah, what do they mean?
Inherit.
Okay, oh. So, some say, use the word inherit, some use the word conquer. Both are true. And to settle. And here also, Vishavtem is also to settle and also to build. This is the mitzvah. And I don't want to get into the fact, you all know that the Rambam doesn't list it as one of the 613 mitzvot, which is totally irrelevant, because, as the Gra points out, there are more than 2,000 mitzvot d'oraita. And it's just a question how to fit 2,000 into 613. But the Rambam himself, in at least five places that I can remember offhand, says explicitly that Yeshuva Eretz Yisrael is a mitzvah d'oraita. The fact that he doesn't list it, and the Rambam does, there's no nafkamina. Okay? Just like there's nobody lists for a married woman to cover her hair as d'oraita, but everyone lists Mishnah, Stam Mishnah, Mishnah Mufureshet, in Mesachet Ketuvot, and Sota, that it's a d'oraita, right? Believing in God. The Ramban does not list believing in God as a mitzvah. Does that mean you don't have to believe in God? Right? Obvious. It's just a question what to list and what not to list of the 613 and how to fit those 2,000 into the magic number. Okay? This is the mitzvah, A, to live in the land of Israel, and also to build it. But the first poal, the first verb, to inherit or to conquer the land, if we use the Lashon of the Ramban, lo na'azva biyad zulatenu min ha'umot. We will not leave the land of Israel in the hand of other nations. In other words, what the Ramban is saying, and this is point number three, that it's a mitzvah. Just like there's a mitzvah to put on tefillin, there's a mitzvah to bench after you eat a kibetza of bread, there is a mitzvah to have a Jewish state in Eretz Yisrael. Jewish control of Eretz Yisrael is what we call today having a Jewish state. Now here there's a chidush, because until now, when we mention the Rambam in Source 1, who says that we need to have a Jewish state, even if it's chiloni, but it solves the problem of assimilation, it solves the problem of anti-Semitism, that Jewish state is what? A means or an end? According to the first two points. It's a means to alleviate the problem of assimilation. So let's get all the Jews to live together, and we'll have a Jewish environment, right? Or let's have a Jewish army to alleviate the problem of anti-Semitism. According to point number three, it's an ideal in unto itself to have a Jewish state in Eretz Yisrael. And here comes up an interesting nafkamina. According to the first two points, that Jewish state could theoretically be in Uganda. Right? You remember the Ugandan plan? If the whole idea of having a Jewish state is a means, you have it in Uganda, set up a Jewish army, have a Jewish environment, right? Or Volozhin, right? But here, point number three says that there is an ideal to have that Jewish state, that Jewish control, in the land of Israel. Okay? Let's go on. Point four, totally different direction. The Rambam in Ilchot Tshuva, Perek Yud Halacha Bet, you'll see source 3, also in Ilchot Malachim, he says almost word for word the same idea. Why do we dream of Yemot HaMashiach? What is Yemot HaMashiach about? Mipnei ze nitavu kol Yisrael. He says there aren't going to be supernatural miracles. It's not going to involve Tchiyat HaMeitim. The Mashiach is going to be someone. Do you remember when we discussed Bar Kochba? Right, Matas, were you here? When Rabbi Akiva, the Rambam, brings down Lahalacha, who is the Mashiach going to be? Somebody like Bar Kochba, who is a political and military leader. Okay? If so, he's not going to revive the dead. He's not going to do supernatural miracles. If so, what's the difference between Yemot HaMashiach and Galut? Says the Rambam, jump down to the end of Source 3. Four lines from the end. Avo Yemot HaMashiach hu olam hazeh v'olam k'minago olech. The world is not going to change when the Mashiach comes. Ela she'amalchut tachzor liYisrael. The difference is that sovereignty will return to the Jewish people. Ukvar amru chachamim arishonim. Chazal say in Masechet Shabbat, if you remember the, it's in B'mei Shayotzeit, Ein ben olam hazeh limot ha-mashiach, ela shibud malchuyot bilvad. The only difference between galut and yemot ha-mashiach is that we will no longer be subservient to the non-Jewish nations. In other words, what is point number four? What is point number four? That a Jewish state is part of what? That's part of the Geula. It's a stage in the Geula process. Not only is it a stage, according to the Rambam here, it's the most important stage. And the next source six, is fantastic. Because there's enough Gemina Lema'aseh. A lot of times when you speak with Haredim, you know, they'll say, well, you have your Hashkafa, they have their Hashkafa, who knows what Hashkafa is, right? When there's enough Gemina Lema'aseh, that sharpens the point, okay? The Shulchan Aruch, in Siman Tavkov Samech Aleph, Harwe Are Yehuda Bechur Banan, Omer Are Kodshecha Hayu Midbar Vekorea. When a person during the Galut comes to the cities of Judea, and he sees them in their destruction, he says the Pasuk, your holy cities have become desolate, and he tears his clothing as a sign of mourning. Now, you guys here in Yeshivat HaKotel, I'm sure you've had shiurim about what to do regarding Har HaBayit. Okay, Reb Moshe Feinstein says yes to do Kriya, Reb Chaim David Halevi, most poskim say not to do Kriya. The Mishnah Berurah says, but what about Bichlal, the cities, before you come to this part of Yerushalayim? Before you see Har HaBayit, Bichlal, when you, if a person would land in the boat in Ashdod, right, which is also part of Yehuda, you used to have to do Kriya. Why doesn't anybody do Kriya today? What word here in this Si'if has to be halachically defined? Churban. What is Churban? The Mishnah Berurah, he summarized, not his chidush. It's brought down, I think, in also the Beit Yosef, the Bach, the Magen Avraham. Most of the Achronim give the same definition. What is Bichurbanan? Afilu Yoshvim Behem Yisrael. Even if there are 10 million Jews living in Arei Yehuda, Shayishmael, Kevan Shayishmaelim Moshlim Aleim, as long as the Arabs are ruling it, Mikri Bichurbanan. They are considered in destruction. In other words, we have here halachic nafkamina. When a person comes to Arei Yehuda today, do you have to do kriya or not? Halacha lemaaseh, you don't do kriya. And the Haredim know it also. They don't do kriya when they come to Har Nof or Givat Shaul or why? Because the Mishnah Berurah says, what defines whether we're in Churban or whether we're in Geula? If we have a Jewish state. If the Arabs are controlling, if there's an Arab rule, you have to do Kriya, because it's considered Churban. If there's a Jewish control, then you don't have to do Churban. Why? Because we're not in Galut. Yeah.
So even though Arabs are in the Knesset?
Correct. Because the state doesn't want, first of all, politically everybody knows that nobody takes the Arabs seriously. Even in the most extreme left-wing government, if you remember the Yitzhak Rabin's government in Oslo, that's why he was assassinated, because he was extremely left-wing, was very anti-religious. Shulamit Aloni was the minister of education, and she wanted to stop teaching Akedat Yitzhak in the schools, and it was really the most anti-religious that government that Israel ever had. They didn't take Arabs into the government, because they knew that as soon as they would have Arabs in the government, they would lose their legitimacy in the eyes, even of the leftists. So technically, yeah, there are Arab members of Knesset, but they really don't do anything. They just yell. Sometimes they get on boats. What was her name? To the, you know, the Arab member of Knesset who was on the boat. Maramor from Turkey. You know what I'm talking about? 2 years ago. Sorry?
Yeah,
there was the flotilla, right. So there was an Arab woman member of Knesset who was on the boat. Anyway, let's go on. the next two sources will blow your socks off. Please look in the upper left-hand corner. In source, I guess it's number 8. This is, it's a little race to top, if you want to fill it in. You can keep the sheets. It is from the Maharal Miprag in Sefer Gvurot Hashem, Perek Chai. It's easy to remember. The Maharal, who's living 400 years ago, again, writes about the role of the Jewish state as part of the Geula. Ule Atid, he says, in the future, Malchut HaMashiach Shetit Chadesh, the kingdom of the Mashiach, which will be renewed, Malchut Chadashahi, it's going to be a new kingdom, Yotza Mina Malchut HaRishona Shelifneze, which is going to grow out of the previous kingdom which precedes it. This isn't the punchline yet, but anybody catch what's the Maharal saying? You can? He's saying not only, remember what we saw last time, the Satmar Rebbe says, no, there cannot be a Jewish state before the coming of the Mashiach. The Maharal is telling us not only can there, but there will be. That's the Masoret. Now here comes the punchline. Vezeki Malchut Yisrael HaKdosha. Why does there have to be a previous government out of which will grow the kingdom of Mashiach? Because the holy kingdom of Israel, sheyesh la madrega elohit pnimit, which has that high, godly, spiritual level, hitzomachat, it will grow out of mitoch malchut bilti kedosha. It will grow out of a government which is unholy. Or in modern Hebrew? Chiloni. And that's unbelievable. How did the Maharal know 400 years ago that there is going to be a previous non-religious government out of which will grow the religious, holy kingdom of Mashiach? Right? He wasn't a prophet. 400 years ago, there was no Nevuah. Apparently, his Makor, his source, is source 9. In Micha, the Navi Micha in Treyasar, Perik Dalet Pasuk Chet, in the bottom right-hand corner, on the Pasuk, Ve'atam Migdal Eder, there's a Pasuk which summarizes the process of Geula. The Navi turns to the tower of the flock. We'll discuss soon, we'll see. What does that mean? But he turns to the barn where the flock live. Ophel, the fortress, and the Malbim is going to ask, well, is it going to be a barn or is it going to be a fortress? Okay. He turns to the barn, the fortress, Bat Zion Adecha Teate, daughter of Zion, they will be swept to you. Uvaha Memshala HaRishona, the first government will come, Mamlechet Lebat Yerushalayim, a kingdom to the daughter of Jerusalem. Now, even before we look in the Parshanim, if the Navi is telling me there's going to be a Memshala Rishona, a first government, what does that infer? There's going to be a second government. Now notice also, the Navi calls the first government a Memshala, and the second he calls a Mamlacha. What's the difference? How would you translate the two? Oh, that's exactly what the Malbim points out. The first sovereign state is going to be a government, a republic, what we call a democracy. Out of that will grow the kingdom, the mamlacha of Mashiach. Let's see the Malbim. Right underneath, Pasuk Chet. Ve'atam Migdal Eder. You all heard of the Malbim, right? Classic commentary. Meisef panav el har tzion anizkar. The Navi turns to har tzion, to Jerusalem, and says, Omer elav, ata har tzion, you mountain of Zion, she'atam migdal shele eder halaz, you are the barn for this flock, shehu eder hatzon, hatzola vanidacha, the limping flock, who is outcast, tzolea is limping, right? Am Yisrael, after long and difficult galut, today we know is almost 2,000 years, is limping, is outcast after a very difficult Holocaust. First, we will come back to a framework which is like a barn. When we talk about a barn, what is the connotation? What's your association with the word barn?
Fragile.
Fragile, animals, smelly, dirty. In other words, it's not very imposing. But it's a framework to protect Am Yisrael, the flock, right? Ve'acharkach tie ofel. That barn will eventually turn into an ofel, shumivtzar chazak, which is a strong fortress. In other words, the first stage, he's going to say, is going to be a small, smelly chiloni barn to hold the flock, to protect the flock, which will grow into the fortress of Mashiach. Let's see it inside. The Navi in the Pasuk tells us that the ma'avar, the transition from barn to fortress, where the state of Israel is going to be a small barn into a superpower, is b'shalosh madrigot, in three stages. Tchila, the first stage, batzion adecha teate, shagaluyot yatchilu litkabetz. That's stage number one. In other words, if we're talking about stages in the Geula process, can you see this? Stage A in the Geula process is mass aliyah. Tchilat kibbutz galiyot. In other words, it's not going to be in one day. It's not that the Mashiach is going to come, blow a whistle, and 13 million Jews are going to come on aliyah in one day. Where would we put them, right? Housing, jobs, sewage, right? So therefore, it's going to start out with Tchilat Kibbutz Galiyot. Uva Batzion Adecha Teatea. Ve'achar kach, how does the Pasuk, the Navi Micha continue? Uva HaMemshala HaRishona. The second stage is the Memshala Rishona, the first government. Now, what is the first government, continues the Malbim? Tavo Memshala Ktana. It's going to be small. Again, like a barn. Sheyelem Ktsat Memshala Vanaga, Kmo Shayu Livnei Yisrael Shayalem Shoftim Manigim Otam. Right, just like before we had the kingdom of Shaul and David, we had leaders like Yiftach, Gidon, Shimshon, who were leading us. So too says the Malbim in Yemot HaMashiach, the kingdom of the Mashiach is going to start out first as a Memshala Ktana with leaders. What's called, again, not a monarchy, but a republic, what we call today a democracy. Ve'achar kach, the third stage, Tavo Mamlechet Lebat Yerushalayim. Yele Malchut Kavua Shu Malchut Beit David. And that already is going to be a kingdom. Okay, that's the third stage. C is Malchut Beit David. That's the Malchut of the Mashiach. Now, what is this stage B, which is our topic, the state of Israel? What do we know about it? The Malbim is telling us it's going to be a small, democratic, I don't want to say smelly, but let's use the term of the Malbim, Malchut Bilti Kedosha, right? The Maharal, I'm sorry, what we saw in Source 8, a secular, a small secular democratic government. Sound familiar? That's exactly the state of Israel that we have. And we're told in the Navi Micha, in the Maharal, in the Malbim, and as we saw in the Rambam, that having a Jewish state is a necessary stage in the Geula process. The fifth and final point, which unfortunately we don't have time to go into, let's see quickly in Source 13. Yechezkel, do you have 13? Yeah, on the left-hand side. Do you have it? No, on the other side. Yeah, there you go. Yechezkel talks about the Galut. And you remember just what's the background? For several hundred years, Am Yisrael, on and off, is doing Avodah Zarah. Navi after Navi is warning us, if you don't do tshuva, I'm going to send you to Galut. If you don't do tshuva, I'm going to send you to Galut. Now, what happens after a parent or a babysitter or Madrid, warns a child a lot of times that he's going to punish them, and he never carries out his threat?
Don't do it.
The kids, they don't take you seriously anymore. In other words, Galut was supposed to be a threat that wasn't meant to be carried out. It's like if your father's driving on the highway and the kids in the back seat are making a lot of noise, and he turns around and says, "If you don't shut up, I'm going to let you out here in the middle of the highway." He doesn't really mean to let you out in the middle of the highway, but it's a threat that isn't meant to be carried out. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu threatens he's going to send us into exile. Problem? We don't take him seriously. So he has no choice. He carries out the threat. Vayavo el agoyim asher ba'usham. So we come to exile, to the goyim. Vayechalilu et shem kudshi. And we desecrate God's name. We make a chilul Hashem. Why is galut a chilul Hashem? Be'emor lahem am Hashem ele u'me'artzo yatzau. Because the goyim tell us this is God's nation and they were exiled from their land. Right? The God of Israel must not be too potent. Because the God of Bavel is stronger than the God of Israel. That's a chilul Hashem. And the Romans said the same thing when they destroyed the second Beit HaMikdash. Remember? Ayeh Hashem Elokechem. Jew, where is your God? And throughout the Crusades, whenever the Christians killed the Jews, how did they explain that it was our fault, our punishment, that we're wandering from pogrom to pogrom, right? The wandering Jew? As a punishment that we didn't accept Yeshua, right? Because we're in the wrong religion. And the worst chilul Hashem was the Holocaust, where without a doubt, even many Jews to this day are still asking, where was God in the Holocaust? And that question is the biggest chilul Hashem that could be. Because you know what? It's a good question. Right? I wouldn't talk this way to high school kids, right? But it's a good question. Answers HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And by the way, this is how I deal with the Holocaust. That only after there is a big she'ilah can you have a big tshuva. Did you catch that? Only after there is a big she'ilah can you have a big tshuva. And the Navi tells us, "Ve'echmol al shem kodshi asher chilulu beit Yisrael bagoyim asher ba'u shama." And you defiled the name of God by going into galut. "Lachein emor lebeit Yisrael komar Hashem lokim lo lema'anchem ani oseh beit Yisrael." Here's the punchline: HaKadosh Baruch was saying, "I'm not redeeming you because you deserve it." What, the Jews today are so much more religious than they were 500 years ago? Why is Hashem bringing us back to Eretz Yisrael, bringing us the Geula today? It's not that we deserve it. Lo lemanchem ani oseh beit Yisrael. So why is he bringing us back? Ki im l'shem kodshi asher chilaltem bagoyim asher batem shan. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, I can't take the chilul Hashem anymore. And this is the answer the Satna Rebbe says in Vayom Moshe. How can anybody be a Zionist? Right, the state of Israel is non-religious. Yechezkel is answering, you know what? Even if it's non-religious, at least it stops the chilul Hashem of the Galut and of the Holocaust. Then anybody who wants to know if the God of Israel is still alive after the Holocaust, 3 years later in 1948, saw that Hashem Elokei Yisrael Melech, the God of Israel, is alive and well and living in the 20th and 21st century. And if that wasn't enough, look at the Six-Day War and look at the Kibbutz Galiot that's going on, right? That is the Kiddush Hashem. To summarize point five, what is point five? Point five, we'll write it up here, for lack of space. Why is it important to have a Jewish state? Because galut, and being subservient to goyim, is called, what does the Navi call that? A chilul Hashem. As opposed to the state of Israel, having a Jewish state with a victorious Jewish army and one of the strongest economies in the world is what the Navi calls a Kiddush Hashem. And that's how he continues. Va'echmol al shem kodshi. By the way, we say this every day in Shmona Esrei. U'mevi go'el ivnei v'nehem. What does God bring, redeem the children? Lima'an shmo. So it shouldn't be a chilul to his name. be'ahava, because he loves us. And even if I send my little boy to his room as a punishment and tell him he can't come back to the Shabbos table until he's willing to apologize, what happens if he never apologizes? I'm going to leave him in his room till his bar mitzvah, till his wedding. Right? Galut is just a punishment, a threat. But God doesn't want us in Galut. And therefore, even if we don't deserve to come back, He's going to bring us back. L'ma'an shmo be'ahava. Ve'echmol al shen kodshi, etc., etc. Ve'lekachti etchem min agoyim, ve'kipatzi etchem mikol haratzot, ve'veti etchem el admatchem. Hashem is going to bring us back to Eretz Yisrael, not because we deserve it, but because He can't stand the Chilul Hashem anymore. And the Holocaust apparently was the straw that broke the camel's back. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu could not take the Chilul Hashem anymore. And that's why the Navi, even if the state of Israel is not religious, it solves the Chilul Hashem. To summarize the 5 points, if you're somebody asks you, how can you be a religious Zionist? How can you support a non-religious state? 5 points. Number one, it solves the problem of assimilation. Number two, it's the only answer to anti-Semitism. Number three, it's a mitzvah to control the Horashtem, to control the land of Israel. Number four, it's a stage, a necessary stage in the Gula process, Davka, a non-religious state, as we saw in the Maharal and in the Malbim. Point number five, because it's a Kiddush Hashem. Even though we don't deserve it, the Navi is telling us, Davka, when we're Chiloni, when we don't deserve it, Hashem is going to bring us back and give us the Jewish state to stop the Chilul Hashem. Any questions? Bezat Hashem, next time we'll start a new topic.
Thank you.
Bezat Hashem. Till when are you guys here? I know that most, if not all, you are staying for Shana Bet, but
June 16th.
Yeah? Everyone?